Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Constant Rambling Podcast. I'm Sarah.
I am Lindsay.
Yay, Lindsay's back. So today we are finishing out the Tiger King series. We're going to be discussing episode 7 and then also the semi-reunion-ish type episode, kind of like a check-in more so.
The thing at the end.
It was okay. It was okay. It was kind of boring.
It covered some questions that I feel like people had been asking,
yeah.
But it wasn't like it gave that much more info.
Yeah.
Where I wasn't, I don't know, whatever.
And I'm sure it was hard for Joel, who was the one who was hosting it, to not just be like, so, you're kind of a jerk. Let's talk about it. You know, it's like not like he could just kind of come out and say it, but so, yeah. It was okay. It was all right. All right, so episode 7 is called Dethroned, and this episode really opens up kind of to the new zoo, which is in Thackerville, Oklahoma. Jeff tells us that he offers a partnership with Lindsay's favorite, Tim Starr. And basically, as we learn, you know, he gets a buttload of money out of Tim and just kind of runs him into the ground.
Yeah. Jeff Blow, it's like the number one scumbag situation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we get a quote from Tim. This is like, we're partners. I'm bringing $2 or $3 million worth of equipment and hundreds of animals.
Yeah.
So, like, Tim was kind of bringing the equipment and the animals, and Jeff was supposed to bring the money.
I mean, he probably would. I'm assuming he would transfer all the animals as well from the GW Zoo into
That's
this new
true.
Zoo.
And some animals.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but for it's so funny because all of these people seem to have genuine money, except for Jeff Lowe.
Jeff. No.
You know, sure. I mean, we kind of hear that he has, you know, he can rent out these Las Vegas mansions and stuff.
He's got
but
something somewhere.
I wonder if all the cub petting, if he, like, charges people to, like, come up to their hotel rooms and to do the cub petting, and that's where he kind of gets money. I don't know. It's super weird.
It is.
Because that's the one person we really don't ever talk about money with,
no.
You know?
Except what everyone thinks he has.
Right. Everyone thinks he has money. He gives the impression he has money, but we don't really talk ever about money.
No,
with him.
It's like he's trying to, like, fake it till you make it,
yeah.
And he's just never making it. He's just like, the next one will work out. You're like, that's not how this works.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have Tim even says, like, it's a collaboration between two of the most notorious a-holes in the industry.
And his monkey's with him at all times.
Yes. Do you have the monkey quote? So he goes...
Oh, yeah.
Goes, I'm smarter than everyone. They say you can't get work done with a monkey on your back, so I put it on my front. And he's just carrying this monkey, like,
yeah.
In his shirt.
In his shirt. That monkey is his baby and best friend and companion in life.
You do see a creepy shot of the monkey eating out of his mouth.
Now, no, like, he's, like, gargling water like he's a mama bird.
Yes. I lost a lot of respect for Tim Stark in that moment.
It was so gross.
So gross.
I mean, I love my pets, but I would never just, like, have water in my mouth and let my dog lick water out of my mouth. It's so, like, disgusting.
It's one thing to, like, keep eating your food after, like, your dog's bit at it a little. Or, like, you know, if your cat paws your water,
right.
And you're like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
It's another thing to let them into your mouth. Shakira, let me be the vessel of your liquid.
Because the monkey can drink, I'm sure. Like,
I'm sure he can.
What made him be like, you know, it would be cool for the cameras if I just let this monkey drink out
It's so gross.
Oh, okay, I'm going to pull it together.
He's got the monkey flu.
Yeah. Well, I think it was funny, though, because the whole time they're filming this, you know, this interaction between Jeff and Tim, Jeff hates Tim. Like,
yes.
You can see it on his face.
Oh, yeah. He's using him 100%.
That he's just kind of putting up with him because he knows that Tim has actual money that he can invest to get this zoo done. And so that's what I don't get. All these people who get, you know, quote unquote, into bed with Jeff, you know, and... But he hates them, and he's not shy about it at all.
No.
He's blatant about how much he does not like Tim.
It's just ridiculous. And like Sarah said, like, basically, he says he'll pay for the money, like, he says he'll provide money, and he doesn't.
Right.
So Tim said he's just paying for everything, and Jeff never pays him back.
Yep, exactly.
So he just keeps saying he will, and he doesn't. So he's spending all the time, all the money.
Yep. Yeah. And you never, it's so funny, and maybe it's just the way the documentary is cut, but all of the labor, like Tim's the one who's using the backhoe. I mean, I don't even know if I'm saying the
Jeff
right.
Jeff thinks he's way too pretty to use the backhoe. Excuse me.
Is it a bulldozer? No.
I don't know. It's a bulldozer.
I don't know anything about machines.
Like a tiny dozer? For little jobs?
Yeah. But you never see Jeff actually moving dirt, digging any. Like, you never see shots of him actually doing it. But you do see a lot of shots of Tim just, you know, digging a bunch of stuff.
That's just not a really dirty joke. You should cut this out. But I was just, Jeff was like, that's not the kind of back that he hoes.
Lindsay, this is a family podcast.
I'm sorry. I regret nothing.
So my favorite part, though, is when Tim at one point almost like upends a shipping container. Yes. And the only thing I could think was, oh, my goodness, please don't let there be animals inside that.
Yes. We see him try to take it off this trailer and it just falls off the
because
side.
Because he's not doing it. I don't think he has like the actual forklift part in far enough. And I don't think that forklift is meant to lift something so big. No. Yeah.
I don't know what else would have been in there, but I was just like, it's hay.
I'm hoping just like a bunch of wood, like building supplies. Yeah.
Fences.
Okay, so then we see the GW Zoo, which looks like it's totally trashed. The FBI is all over the place. It's investigating, taking a bunch of evidence with them. And then we realize that they have found bodies of cats on the premises.
So they've been kind of communicating with Dylan a little bit. Like, right. We see him helping them get some files. And we also see a conversation between Dylan and Joe. That's really sad.
Yes.
So we hear Joe just apologizing for everything, just saying how he wanted it to be different. Yep. And Dylan's just trying to encourage him, like, say he's still going to be there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dylan hangs up and says that they have that conversation like 3 times a day.
Right. Yeah.
So Dylan's kind of working with the feds, but still very much like on Joe's side. Like,
I don't think Dylan is working with the feds. I think you're thinking of something that comes later.
To give them
Files. Well, I think Jeff was the one who let the FBI, like, at the GW Zoo. Okay. I think the thing with the files you're thinking about comes actually later in the documentary.
Okay.
When...
Never mind.
Joe is... Is trying to take people down with him. I think that's what you're thinking of. Are you thinking of the storage unit?
I probably am confused.
Are you thinking of the storage unit part? Yeah, that's later. Yeah.
Spoiler. It's a preview, guys. I just wanted to whet your appetite.
Well, it was funny because, so, you know, like I said, they found bodies of cats on the premises, which my first reaction when I saw that was like, well, duh. Like where would they put cats that have died or passed away or, you know, had complications or were old, you know, that kind of thing. But little did I know, I was being very naive.
Yeah. So they were all shocked.
Yeah.
And the implication is that they didn't need to be shot.
Right.
Doc Antle says, like, they drug up these animal charges and pulled up all these many, many tiny charges because their murder for hire charges were so flimsy that they needed other things to, like, make him seem like this big, terrible criminal.
Right. And I don't disagree with Doc.
No, not at all.
I think the reporter says this as well. You know, when you start bringing animal abuse into things, people will not stand for that. And I think that that's why they added all of these additional animal abuse charges onto what they were, that murder for hire. Because I gotta say, I've watched this a couple of times, and every time I watch it, that murder for hire plot is so sketchy to me.
Yeah.
And I think we'll get into it more because it goes more into this, you know, the story. But it really doesn't add up. It seems completely made up.
It's very forced.
Yep.
So then we see James talking about the zoo in Thackerville again with Jeff and Tim now. He says it was his idea, but, like, things went south. That he felt like Jeff got the deal to save himself from being indicted.
Right.
And then wanted his name on the zoo and then went off.
Yeah.
And he says, James says he tried to get his name on the zoo and Jeff wouldn't do it. He makes it sound like that's the only reason that their, like, relationship went south, though.
Right.
As I want wanted to know more. Like,
yeah, because, yeah, you know, Jeff thinks James is ridiculous because he, you know, he wouldn't put the name on the zoo, and James thinks Jeff owes, you know, him for getting him this deal with the feds. And in my notes, I put, ladies, pull yourselves together.
For real.
It sounds like they're having a cat fight. Ba-dum-bum-ching.
That was terrible.
My husband is smiling.
On your own.
My husband's smiling. You guys, I think I'm super hilarious. Yeah, so Eric straight up asks James at one point, like, what was Jeff's involvement in the whole murder for hire plot? And James says that Jeff was the one who put the whole thing together because he's the one who initially offered to use Alan Glover to do everything. And I was like, yeah, duh.
Right. It's clearly, like, Jeff has a way larger role in this than he's getting punished for.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Because we hear on the phone call, there's a few recorded phone calls that they share with us throughout episode six and seven. And on the recorded phone call, we hear Jeff telling Alan, remember, this is about getting Joe in trouble and getting locked up for what he did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So we hear and learn that it sounds like pretty much almost everyone's going to be brought into the trial to be a witness. Mm-hmm. Josh Dial says, you know, the FBI told him you're kind of either on team FBI or you're on team Joe. And it sounds like Josh didn't want to get sucked up into, you know, he could see. You can obviously see that, you know, Joe's kind of maybe going down a path that you don't want to go down. So he ends up working for the FBI too.
Right.
Eric Cowie was brought in to testify. He tells us that he knew and heard Joe shoot an animal. And then he apparently told Eric, if I knew it was this easy, I would just go into the cages and shoot them all.
Yeah.
The next scene is really awful. The scene after, do you remember the scene after he testifies, Eric Cowie? Yeah. He's very drunk.
He's very drunk.
At that time. And, you know, you can just see, I think he's upset about the whole situation. He's probably upset about having to relive what happened to these cats while testifying, and it's just weighing so heavily on him and so heavily on his conscience. And, you know, he's kind of out of his mind a little bit, and he's just talking about how much the cats trusted him and how it seems like Joe used him because he had this connection with the cats. And so he used him, Eric, to basically kind of lure the cats over so that he could dart them and then shoot them.
It's really sad. And you just see Eric talking about how, like, as they're passing away, like, that they'd look in his eyes.
Right.
And that he just felt like he could see their, like,
betrayal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. And so, all right, let's move on. This is just, that was terrible. That was a hard part of the documentary to watch.
It was really rough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we see that Carol obviously testifies, and of course, I'm sure with everything that he put on the internet show, she and the prosecution just must have had so much to give to the jury. I mean, there's, even in that deposition where he's like, well, I did 57 episodes of Carol Baskin. I'm like, ugh, none of these look good on you now.
Yeah. And we see a very snotty Carol saying that the only thing that surprised her is that he didn't want to do it himself.
Yeah.
That she's not surprised he tried to follow through.
Sure.
I'm like, ugh.
Okay. But also, there's this really weird, like, slow footage of Carol and Howard kissing, and the music is so creepy. And I was like, oh, I do not like this part of the documentary.
That's not
why
about
are you playing
that.
This? Why is everybody moving so slowly, and why is the music so creepy?
Yeah, it was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
All of their relationship is uncomfortable.
Okay, so then we hear that John is also testifying against Joe on both the murder for hire plot and the movement of animals, which I'm assuming is kind of the selling of the tigers. We hear that John apparently drove Alan to Texas to get a fake ID so that Alan could drive into Florida to kill Carol. And I just thought it was weird because we'd never heard of any involvement by John before in this whole thing.
Like, I trust John.
Right.
That he's, like, not lying.
Sure.
But it was an interesting information just to not say until
now. Yeah.
Also, I thought it was weird that he was wearing clothes.
He put on a shirt.
You guys, he dressed up for court.
Can you imagine if he showed up in court with no shirt on?
Like, my art is my clothing.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. Just a lot of these things, the whole driving to get a fake ID, I don't know why you would need... They don't explain it. Why, you know, why he needs a fake ID to get to Florida. Mm-hmm. Because I doubt they're going to buy him... They're dumb enough to buy him a plane ticket. You know, right. So why would he need an ID to get to... I don't know. The whole thing sounds made up.
Yep. And so we see Jeff saying that... Or, sorry, James mm-hmm. is saying that Jeff not only knew about the plot to kill Carol,
yep.
but helped develop the plot.
Yeah.
He gave him maps. He suggested all of it.
Yeah.
And we see Sylvia Corkle, the reporter, saying yeah. that, you know, Jeff Lowe is a very skilled con man.
Yep.
And she said, it's shocking that he's not facing any charges, yep. and it's no surprise that he didn't testify because he would have perjured himself.
Yes, that, to me, is the biggest... red flag
yes.
that he supposedly is working for the FBI but and supposedly giving testify. All of this information, but the FBI is not calling him to be a witness.
Right. Yeah. And we see James saying too, like, letting the hitman go. He says, letting the hitman go shows you it's kind of a witch hunt.
Yeah.
He went down to murder a lady
yeah.
and isn't even getting probation. Like, whether or not he actually did it
yeah.
or anything. Like, if you're gonna arrest Joe and send him to prison for attempted to murder to
right.
hire, then you should also arrest the attempted hitman.
Yeah, for sure. Like, there should have been some kind of repercussion.
Right.
Because Alan, in a lot of the testimony that he's giving to camera, he says that he never went to Florida. Mm-hmm. He never planned on going to Florida mm-hmm. or doing anything. So, if he's lying
mm-hmm.
under oath, that's an automatic mistrial.
Yeah. And people, that's what Joe says. We hear a recording of Joe saying
right.
that Alan lied on the stand, that they have phone recordings proving he
right.
never went to Florida, but on the stand, he says that he did.
Right.
Like, Joe on, or, sorry, yeah, Alan under oath
yep.
testified that he went to Florida, and they have recordings saying that he never did.
Right.
And no one even questioned it.
Yeah.
Everyone's just like, okay, ran on by.
Let's go.
So, one way or another, like, something's a lie. It should have at least been looked into.
Right. Yeah, I wish we could... I didn't do any digging, but, you know, it would be nice to have almost, like, the court transcripts to understand exactly what it was that Alan said under oath, and then also mm-hmm. how the defense tried to discredit him, you know,
yeah.
when it was their turn to interview Alan.
And
that would just be interesting to me.
We have a wild shot of Alan... He's like,
oh,
I hate that I'm part of this. I wish I wasn't, but Joe deserves everything he gets. And then he adds, sir, like he's like trying to be professional. He deserves everything he gets, sir, or more. He's in the tub. You guys, he is.
It was so uncomfortable. I was
in
like,
the tub.
And he's taking.
Sitting, like knees up. He's like, bathing himself, little like sponge water bath, like
he's taking the water, he's like cupping his hand and he's just like splashing it on himself, like he's never actually taken a bath in
no.
his life, and he doesn't know what he's doing, but he's like, I think this is how normal
right.
people take a bath.
Oh my gosh, like he just looks like, and I'm sure this was the goal of this, I guess
yeah.
but like he looks like a sad little old man
right
just like alone in his tub.
It was,
but, like,
really weird.
Why?
Yeah. What was the point of that shot? I can't imagine that Eric was like, you know what we need? We need a shot of
yeah,
Alan
yeah.
in a tub.
The only way this
The tub was so small.
I know. The only way this is excusable is, like, if they knocked on the door and he's like, oh, I forgot. Hey, come on in. And they were like, oh, maybe he's just washing up. We'll get some nice morning shots. And then they were like, oh, he's in the tub.
Yeah.
And they were like, shoot, we really liked his quotes. We got to keep him in. Like, that's the only way this is allowable. I just don't get it.
Yeah. All right. So after Alan testifies, we hear that Joe took the stand, which
shocked everyone.
Shocked everyone. His
mm-hmm.
lawyer stood up in court and said, I am not advising my client to do this. I advise him not to testify, which again, like, I don't want to tell you how to run your life, but testifying is like, you have a right to not testify as a defendant, right? Mm-hmm. And it's never a good idea is my stance on that. Like, whether you did something or not, it just never, I don't think I've ever heard of a case where, you know, the defendant took the stand and everybody was like, you know what? This guy's innocent. Like, it just doesn't happen. It just makes you look guiltier.
It does. But Sylvia Perkle does say that he has an answer for everything.
Right. Right.
So he's like ready to go with all of his defense.
Right. Because we hear that Joe admits he did give Alan his Alan money, but it was because he was directed by Jeff. And, you know, it kind of circles back to the episode where we hear that Alan is not listening to anything that Joe says. He refuses mm-hmm. to wear uniform. Joe's complaining to Jeff about how frustrated he is with Alan. Mm-hmm. And so Jeff apparently texts Alan and say, well, Alan is probably better off in South Carolina. So the Thanksgiving episode in episode mm-hmm. 5, where, well, he says people were apparently donating money, but then there's a scene where they say Jeff told Joe to get money out of the till. Anyway, so Joe does give Alan $3,000 to go to South Carolina. Yeah. And I'm sorry, where does Alan end up again? In South Carolina. Yeah. He doesn't end up in Florida. His phone records are nowhere near Florida. He ends up in South Carolina. There's a text that says maybe he would be better in South Carolina, and that's where he is.
It's just, Jeff is just a scumbag, yeah. Guys. It just all seems like such a lie.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a lot. So Joe says this was all instructed by Jeff.
Yeah. Doc and Allen even is...
Doc Antle.
Yeah, Doc Antle. Defense. Doc Allen, dang it. I did write Doc Allen in my notes. Doc Antle is convinced, Josh is convinced, pretty much everybody's convinced that this whole thing was set up by Jeff.
Yeah.
To incriminate Joe.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we see Doc Antle giving a funny summary of, like, the cost of the hitman. Yeah. Just like, who hires a $3,000 hitman?
Right, right.
And he goes, who's also stupid? Like, but he's talking about, like, there's no way a cross-country, like, traveling hitman can cost $3,000.
Yeah.
Like, so all of it in and of itself, like, I mean, Joe, I feel like he would be stupid enough to hire a $3,000 hitman.
He was like, I'm getting the deal of a lifetime.
Right, but, like, who's going to be a hitman for $3,000?
Right.
Like, no.
Yeah.
Never. So it's all just janky.
Yeah. And then go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, then we see Jeff, who's whining again. And I'm like, lady.
And giving a very flimsy response for this.
He says, what is setting up a person, turning them in or allowing them to talk while you're recording them? And he apparently calls it investigate. He doesn't say that he was setting anyone up. He was investigating.
Also, you stupid, like, you know what setting up a person is. Like, this is just the classic, like, I know I'm in trouble response. Like, well, what is setting up a person?
Yeah.
Did I sometimes encourage him just to get the sound bites? I mean, maybe. And then I'm like, then that's a lie.
Yeah. See, this is the most incriminating part. And to me, this is where the whole case falls apart, is when he says, did I encourage him from time to time? Probably. But because I wanted that soundbite to give to the authorities to convict him. And I was like,
oh, if you have to encourage him to get him to say it, then he wouldn't have done it in the first place.
You know, okay. Like,
I encouraged you to murder someone by handing you the gun and helping you pull the trigger, but you shot him.
Like, right.
That's not how that works. Then you never would have shot them.
Yeah. So I wonder, I'm sure that Joe and his lawyers are going to appeal the decision. And so I wonder if the documentary is going, like, some of the footage that was shot in the documentary is actually going to come into play in the trial.
I hope
in the appeals process that, like, none of this makes sense. It definitely feels like they made up this whole murder for hire plot.
Oh, yeah.
And again, I'm not disputing the animal abuse charges, the selling of cubs charges at all.
I'm not disputing that.
And I do think that he should be in trouble for those things.
He should definitely be in jail.
But I don't think that he should be in jail for a murder for hire plot.
And I think other people need to be in jail with him.
Right. Yep. Absolutely.
So, yeah. And we see Joe, like, he feels good after testifying.
Yeah.
He's like, I think I'll get out of this.
Yeah.
And just blunt, just stupid again. He's just too stupid for his own good.
Right. Like, well, and I think in the closing arguments, the prosecution shows all of the footage of his hate for Carol.
Right.
Which, if I was on the jury, that would weigh heavily on my decision on whether I thought he was mm-hmm. involved. Especially, it's kind of hard because, you know, we're seeing this as an outsider looking in, right? We have this documentary footage where it really feels like this is a complete setup.
Yeah.
And it feels made up. But if you don't have that information and you're on a jury and someone's telling you that they talked about killing this woman multiple times,
right.
You have tons of people testifying, you know, that he said multiple times that mm-hmm. he wanted to kill this woman. And not only that, but you have, like, hours of videotape of him telling everyone
right.
who will listen that he would like to kill this woman.
Right.
How, I don't know how, unless his defense came up with some amazing strategy, you know, I don't know how you refute that. His own words.
Right. Unless you sit there whining for hours and hours going, here's all the things Jeff did. He's
right.
janky. We can't
right.
trust him, which doesn't hold up in court in
sure.
that way.
Yep.
You know, like, I just...
I mean, he literally shoots a dummy that he's named Carol and dressed up like Carol
right.
in the head on
right.
the show. So if I was a jury member, I don't know how I would vote. You know, that would mm-hmm. weigh heavily on my decision.
Joe really, yeah, he really, like, dug his own grave. And I am surprised that it's unanimous like it is because, like, Carol says they only needed one person
sure.
to make it a hung jury.
Yep.
And I'm surprised that not even one person, like, doubted, you know?
Yep.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
We do hear the closing argument from the prosecution. It's very moving.
Yeah.
Like, she did a great job. She talks about, like, how Joe built his own kingdom, says
yep.
he's the Tiger King, but that the problem with kings is they get to make their own rules.
Right.
And so when he felt his kingdom was under attack, he attacked back, and that, like, it's the jury's decision
yeah.
to, like, say that we're not allowed to make our own rules in that
yeah.
way. So, I mean, they did a great job.
Yep.
Whether they were working with unknowingly false evidence or not.
Right.
You know, like, she's a smart woman.
Sure.
And she did her job well.
Yep.
Just in a small defense of her. We're not
yeah.
mad at her. We're
nope.
mad at Jeff and everyone else.
I mean, that's her job,
exactly.
right? And your job, regardless of what happens, is to do your best, so.
Right. She's a boss woman lawyer. Like, you go.
Yeah. So, we see Ranky, who's outside the courthouse, kind of
yeah.
waiting. And we also learn that he was never called to testify, which I thought was weird. He was the
and
manager of the zoo
weird.
For, like, 14 years.
He's like, I ran that zoo
yeah.
for 14 years. Why wouldn't they want to talk to me?
Right.
He does say that he was approached early on about testifying,
yeah.
but then never heard from them again.
Yeah.
It's very, that.
That's weird.
Another one of those very concerning things.
Yeah.
Like, why, and on Joe's side, like, why did Joe's people not reach out to him?
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. And we see Eric Cowie in a diner.
Yeah.
Named Redneck Haven. Cooking burgers with
yep.
his bare hands. Watching the news, getting
yep.
the court results.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a funny shot.
It was
like,
a really
is
funny
your new life now?
So we know that January 22nd, 2020, the jury deliberated for just under 4 hours, and they found Joe guilty on all counts, and he was sentenced
Ooh.
To 22 years in federal prison.
Yikes.
We then get a shot of Carol and Howard celebrating together, and Howard starts singing to Carol. Did you like
yeah,
that shot,
I did
Lindsay?
Not. I did not like that at all.
They just, maybe it's unfair to them, but I feel like they just picked the worst and most awkward moments between Carol and Howard. I'm sure that in any marriage or relationship, there's awkward moments and there's awkwardness, but they just seem to, like, find the most awkward moments.
Or they're just awkward all the time.
I mean, maybe. She does seem kind of like an awkward person.
It's
she lives in Florida.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. But it's not as weird or gross as the very next scene when
you
we
guys.
See that Jeff and Lauren have, for some reason, procreated. They are having a baby.
Lauren's pregnant.
And the next thing out of Jeff's mouth guaranteed that pretty much every female will dislike him for forever.
I hated him. If I hadn't hated him before, I would have instantly hated him then.
He says, after the baby, we get Lauren back into the gym. And then Lauren asks him if he's ready, and he responds, I'm ready for that nanny. And he shows us a picture of her. Like, he's got nannies.
First of all, getting on his phone back into the gym.
Yeah.
Excuse you.
I'm sorry.
She just grew an entire human being.
Yeah.
Your part was not that important. Right. So you do not understand what's going on here. So, and it's just, it's like in a complaining way too.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, about time.
Right.
Seeing this fat body.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, she's growing your child for you. Like.
The whole thing is gross.
I'm so sorry it's such an inconvenience for your eyes. But it's not like it's great for her entire body either.
Yeah. It's.
Ugh.
He's so gross, guys.
And so he said that they can get a nanny, but his thing was that he gets to pick her. And he picks this hot nanny, and he says, like, no point in having her around if she's not going to be nice to look at.
Yeah. And Lauren, she kind of laughs in the scene, but then honestly she has this look of good grief, what have I done?
No, I said she really does not seem to be okay.
Yeah.
Like, it's this false laughter, like, oh, it's so funny, my husband.
Yeah.
No.
I just have the word barf in my notes.
Yes. Oh, he's just such a scumbag.
Because you see him on his computer. He's just looking at pictures of girls. And Lauren's trying to convince us and probably herself that some of these girls are bilingual. And so that would be great if they could teach a baby that as well. And I just wrote, ... Yeah, okay.
Sure. And like, how long are you planning on having the nanny around? That's another question.
Right.
Because it's not going to be a help when the baby starts speaking, if it's not going to be there.
Right.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
They're just...
It's gross, you guys. So gross. Okay.
Yeah. So, Sylvia says that the word on the street is that Jeff will be arrested sometime soon, but that they're waiting for something much larger.
Sure. And that was January of this year. So, you know, it's only April, and, you know, with all the pandemic stuff happening, I'm sure that's slowed things down. So, fingers crossed. Okay, so then we end the documentary in a way that I honestly was not expecting at all.
Well, first, though, in between this announcement of Joe's conviction and Sylvia saying that Jeff's going to get arrested, we then flash to a bizarre sequence of James jet skiing.
Oh, yeah, that was weird.
To Eye of the Tiger. He's just like, and there's no explanation.
Right.
I don't think he even says anything.
Right.
It's just like a weird sequence, Eye of the Tiger, James jet skiing.
You know, I wonder what he and Eric talked about, because there is that one part in the end where he's like, all right, turn those cameras off. Like, he's about to tell Eric something, because we know none of these girls can keep their mouths shut.
No.
Everybody's talking about everybody's business. So, yeah. So I wonder what that discussion was.
I know. I want to know. Yeah. I hope to God that they like were like, all right, we'll turn the cameras off, but we're still recording audio.
That would be amazing.
Right?
Yeah. So basically, the end of the whole documentary is everyone just turning on everyone, which I'm not, that's not what shocked me. But, you know, James says to Eric, you know, they don't know what I'm going to do. I don't think I'm finished in this. Then raises his eyebrows. And I think that's when, you know, he says, turn the cameras off.
Yeah. And we see Ronke saying that it's all so crooked that all these people, that the other people involved aren't paying the price. And
he says
he literally called the feds about it and that they told him it was far from over.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, I'm glad to
hear that. So Joe surprises everyone by telling us that he has a ton of evidence that he's going to give it all to PETA.
PETA!
What? That was so shocking. I was like, what? This is crazy.
Yeah.
And so we see the storage unit being, you know, kind of cut open.
Dylan, there it is.
Yeah, there it is. Dylan is telling us that it's filled with documents, paperwork, hard drives, permits for transferring animals. And Brittany Pete is foaming at the mouth to get all of this information
she's so
from
excited.
Joe.
Yeah.
So Eric starts looking through some of the documents, and there's a document from May 29, 2018, which looks like it's like a handwritten bill of sale to Doc Antle for 2 male tigers, 1 female tiger, and 1 female liger. But Dylan shuts Eric down so quickly and literally like takes the file out of his hand. He's like, don't show that. You can't show that. So I don't know what that means. I mean, we already know that maybe it was just that he at that time didn't want to implicate Doc Antle in the bill of sale, because we know that Joe's already been charged for, you know, selling baby cubs, which he's not supposed to be doing.
I think it was more of a defense of Doc Antle.
Right.
But yeah, and the PETA lady, like, I wrote the PETA lady because I forgot her name. Brittany.
Brittany, yes. The PETA lady.
I just read off my notes without a question and realized that I had meant to ask her name.
Right.
So the PETA lady. But Brittany's not blind. Like, she says that she sees that Joe's motivation is revenge.
Yep.
But she's just going to take what she can get.
For
like,
sure.
She's like, whatever, you can have your motives. Like, I have mine. And I'll take what you're going to give me.
Yeah.
And we'll get people for it.
Exactly. I mean, her whole thing is to shut down what she perceives as animal cruelty. You know, that's their whole stance. So, absolutely. Well, it's funny. Eric goes and he asks Doc, why do you think they haven't targeted you? And he says, I'm not messing around. How do you target me? But Brittany tells us that Joe told her that Doc Antle puts tiger cubs that have aged out into a gas chamber and then cremates the bodies in his on-site crematorium. I hope that this is not true. It does. To have a gas chamber that like nobody knows about.
Like in crematorium, all of it. I hope it's a lie.
I can't deal with it if it's the truth, you guys. Like, it's just too much. This, I really hope that that's not true. It better not be. Doc Antle, I'm coming for you if it is.
But that's a really bizarre thing to make up, because it'd be really easy to disprove that.
Right.
Like, I feel like if he was gonna lie about it, he'd just be like, oh, he shoots them in the night and then throws them away.
Right.
You know, like, so, like, those things require gas chambers and crematoriums.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's interesting that he would make up a lie that involves, like, necessity for, like, those equipment, that they'd be able to just say, like, that's not true. There's none of that here.
Right. And then also, because, you would think that they would be able to track even, like, purchase history of, like, whatever gases they would use to put, you know, animals to sleep or, I mean, crematorium, you have to get those ovens crazy hot. Like, it's super dangerous work. You have to, like, burn a body so that nothing's left but ashes. It has to be so crazy hot.
I mean, maybe they have them on site for when animals pass away. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a crazy thing that we're hoping is a lie.
Yeah. But it better be. Don't play me like that, Doc Antle.
Yikes.
So then, surprise, surprise, we find out that Jeff and Tim's relationship has completely soured, and they are no longer business partners. No one saw that coming.
And Jeff, like, just implicates himself. Like, he's like, seems like everyone starts out well with me, and then it ends bad.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, then you are the problem. Yeah.
If you're the common denominator, you're the problem.
Yes. Doug says this all the time. He's like, if one person's a jerk to you, then they're a jerk. If everyone's a jerk to you, then you are the jerk.
That's amazing.
And that's how I felt about Jeff. I'm like, dude, if everything goes south with you, then you are the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So Tim takes his adorable little monkey and he gets out of there. And then they share a piece of pizza together.
Probably. But they do. Tim chews it up first.
No, you see him. He has a piece of pizza.
Really?
And he has he rips the little piece off and gives it to the monkey. And the monkey's just sitting on his shoulder.
Inside his shirt.
And he's eating pizza and it's adorable. And it kind of makes me want to have a baby monkey.
Times. Don't start with the exotic stuff.
So, you know, everyone's kind of at war with one another. Everyone's turning on each other. But to me, towards the end of the documentary, Saf and Josh, you know, completely sum it up. Saf says, nobody wins. Not a single animal won from this war. And Josh goes on to say, you know, when what started off as this feud between two people, a good and noble fight to stop cub selling and cub petting, turned into a personal and legal court battle, and it just became about them. It has to be millions of dollars that was spent. It has to be. Think of the hundreds of thousands of dollars they spent investigating Joe. Think of what millions of followers, donors, and whatnot. And think of how far that they could go in saving these tigers in their natural habitats. We've completely lost sight of what really matters here, and that is the conservation protection of the species of this planet. And he's not wrong.
No.
Neither one of them are.
That's where it comes around to, is that, you know, it started out well and then it got personal.
Right, because we even see that this also was once Joe's mission. When he first started the zoo and first opened up, he tells a reporter that they have a place in the world, but it's in Africa, Asia, and India. It's not in Oklahoma. And then he says, Joe says, the state has to pass laws for breeding to stop.
Yes. Which, again, whenever we hear, like, it's the same thing with Carol, like, used to thinking it's okay, and now she doesn't. And,
right.
And, like, Joe went the other way. Like, I just wish we'd have, like, a moment of them, like, acknowledging that and explaining why. I think in Joe's case, like, he just, like, liked the money.
Yeah.
And he just got spiraled.
Yep.
But I do find it interesting that in all of his intense and increasing hate, he never, like, says, like, I used to think that.
Sure.
So I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Like, kind of janky.
Yep.
But, I mean, I wouldn't want to address it either, because how do you explain that?
Yeah.
But it's really sad.
It is. Because, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, you know, towards the end of the documentary, we have footage of Joe when he left the zoo.
Yeah.
But hasn't been arrested yet. And he tells us about those two chimpanzees.
Yeah, this is so
sad. So sad, you guys. Mm-hmm. And he moved them after he left the GW Zoo, and he kept them both separate. But he tells us they moved them to the Great Ape Center in Florida, and they started hugging each other.
Yeah. So he said they had sat next to each other in their cages.
Yeah.
Separate cages, but next to each other for 10 years. And he said within 2 days, they were out in the field, like, hugging on each other and, like, being friends.
And he has this, like, almost moment of realization. He says, did I do that? Well, yeah, I guess I did.
He's like, did I deprive them of that for 10 years?
Right.
Yep. I deprived them of being chimpanzees.
Ugh. I have goosebumps all over.
Yeah.
It's awful.
It's really rough. And it's really sad to see these people, like, you know, Saf and Josh and even Joe in his own little way, like, just realizing there's no benefit for the animals in this.
Right. So the whole documentary ends letting us know that, like we said, Joe was sentenced for 22 years. Doc Antle's place apparently was raided in December 2019. He has not commented on allegations of cub euthanasia. And we learn that 5,000 to 10,000 tigers are kept in captivity and fewer than 4,000 remain in the wild.
And that's only in captivity in the U.S.
Right.
So, and the Big Cat Safety Act has not passed.
Has not passed, yep.
So there you go. End of episode 7.
End of episode 7.
Yay.
Okay, so we're going to go now into kind of this bonus episode. It's called The Tiger King and I. It's hosted by Joel McHale. And the way that Lindsay and I kind of wrote our notes is kind of, you know, the questions that Joel would ask and then how people answered. So it's a little bit different than how we covered the documentary because
it was more interviewy.
Yeah,
sure.
It was. Like,
it was question, answer, and then he moved on to the next person.
Right.
So
yeah, it wasn't a story like they tell in the documentary.
But they covered some interesting points that are fun to catch up on.
Absolutely. All right. So Joel starts off interviewing Eric Cowie, and Joel asks Eric, you know, how has your life changed since the documentary? But Eric tells us that he never watched it.
And first he's like, how are you? And Eric says, just living clean and
loving Jesus. I love it.
It's like, are you? And I couldn't tell if he was like making a joke.
I know. I don't. I think he was serious.
Like if he actually, like, maybe he's changed his life.
Right.
Or does he think that's how he's living?
Right.
Like, I'm just like, I guess I don't know. It just seems like you are not living clean or loving Jesus. But I hope you are.
Yeah. Yeah, so Eric tells Joel that he hasn't really, you know, yeah. watched it at all. And, you know.
He says, I need to for the memes or memes or whatever they're called.
And so Joel says, well, you should tell Jeff and Lauren that you need some time off to watch it. And my reaction was like,
Jeff
what?
And Lauren? I wrote it in
Jeff and Lauren, though.
So he's still with them, you guys.
He's like their head manager of the zoo now. So apparently that redneck
haven did not work out. They just couldn't handle the burger flipping. They made him use gloves. They were like, you need to use gloves before you touch the burgers. And he was like, I'm out!
So Joel asks Eric if, you know, he has any regrets about his time with Joe. And Eric tells us, you know, when they put the cats down, they would use him because his appearance, his voice, he wasn't sure, but he could get them up so high, you know, the tigers kind of standing on the fence so that they could dart the tigers and then put them down.
Yeah. And he says he could just, like, see in their eyes that the cats felt betrayed. And that's his number one regret.
Yep.
And Joel asks, like, so, you know, we'd assume that the cats needed to be put down, though? And Eric just says, you'd think. Which is so sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he doesn't really explain, like, we don't get specifics of why it happened, but we do hear that.
And so then Joel moves on and says, who do you think had it better at the zoo, the animals or the workers? And Eric says he thinks that the animals, because, you know, Joe would fly off the handle, start yelling for no reason. Mm-hmm. And I think in the Ranky interview, too, you know, he kind of sort of alludes to the fact that Joe seems to be verbally abusive. And, you know, so
that seems to be a pretty clear trend, especially after they started filming for the reality TV show.
Right.
You know, we see that everything escalates after that. So.
Yeah. So, how was it working out? How is it working out working for Jeff is Joel's next question. And Eric tells us that it's pretty relaxed. There's no flying off the handle, no yelling, that he's a pretty calm guy. And my reaction is just more like, are you saying it because you know he's being interviewed next?
Right.
And then he's probably going to watch this because that is not my impression at all.
No. I mean, maybe he is with the zoo, though. Maybe he just, like, doesn't want to handle it. So he just is like, take it. I don't care. Like, because Jeff also doesn't seem like the type of person to want to get his hands dirty.
Yeah.
So maybe he is kind of chill and, like, not micromanaging as a boss.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't trust him, but...
Yeah. And then Joel asks, do you think that Joe should be free? And Eric says, nope, he will probably die in there. Good riddance. Yeah. So we learn that Eric has no hard feeling or no warm feelings towards Joe.
Final words. He's like, do you have any final words you want people to know? And he just I do not do meth. He's just like, I just have, like, some of my teeth missing, but I don't do meth.
He says, it's because I'm old. It's going to happen to all of you as well. I don't do meth. I never have done drugs. Never will.
I just felt like I didn't believe him. But maybe he
really didn't.
I couldn't tell.
Okay.
I
believe him.
Maybe not now. It seems like he did in the past. Maybe he really is living clean and loving Jesus.
Yeah.
And that's why he's offended.
Right.
He's like, guys, I just read the Bible.
Well, I don't think he's missing a lot of teeth. It seems like it's just a few.
Just a few. But yeah. It just seems like someone who would. I don't. I'm judging books by covers.
You are.
I'm looking like a jerk. Well, move on.
All right, so next, Joel interviews Jeff and Lauren, and I just wrote, barf, I don't want to listen to this. So he asks about the zoo being shut down for the moment because of the pandemic, and kind of, and then he asks, of course, how's the nanny working out? And
Jeff says she's excellent, and Lauren says
she's hot.
I just feel like Lauren's trying really hard to be okay with a thing that she's not.
Yeah.
Or if she is okay with it, honey, have higher standards.
Yeah. And, yeah, Jeff chimes back in. She's excellent. You've seen her. And I'm just like, oh, this is so gross, you guys. It's gross because he's not even commenting on how his daughter is being cared for.
Right.
This is supposed to be his daughter. And he doesn't seem to care how his small child is being cared for. All he cares about is objectifying this young woman by the way that she looks.
Right. Well, and like, do your own thing, have your open relationship. Like, I know people that that's how they live. And like, I'm not judging that in and of itself, but I guess it, I don't know. It's a tricky subject. We're not judging on that is all I'm trying to say. Yeah. Like, it's not how you run your relationship and your level of like necessity for, like monogamy.
Yeah.
But that's not what this seems to be. It's not
don't
like
be a gross scumbag. That's
it's not like, oh, we have this open relationship and she's so great and it's the three of us.
Right.
Like, it's just pure objectification of the woman that's caring for his daughter. Well, that's what we're judging.
I think it's hard too because it's not like the nanny speaking out and she's like, I love being in this. Exactly. You know, she's probably, what if this is what she wants to do is to become a chair, you know, a child caregiver.
Yeah. And now she's just pulled into this craziness with these creeps.
And like, she's not even being credited with how well she's doing with the child. It's just, she's hot.
Exactly.
Cool.
Yeah. Ugh. Don't just,
All right, let's move on. So Joel asks, when you look back now on this series, obviously now it's a phenomenon, were you happy about how you were portrayed? And Jeff,
shocker,
Cry Me a River says, no, I think they tried to sensationalize the story to give it a villain, and the villain is right here. And I wrote, boo-hoo.
You're right. He is right there. Literally, in this flat. Like, I just, ugh.
And Joel brings up the point. Well, you did say that everybody starts out well with you, but it ends bad.
Yeah.
And Jeff tries to... He says, himself. Yeah, all these guys come to me when they're in trouble, like Joe. And then as soon as I help them out and, you know, I no longer help them, they turn on me. And Lauren calls them, you know, says that they backstab. And again, I wrote, boo hoo.
Right. Please.
Yeah. So then Joel says, I don't know where you found Alan, but he's the most terrifying person I've ever seen on camera.
I just thought that was hilarious.
But then, like, Jeff tries to make a joke. He says, well, he's the sweetest hitman you could ever hire. And I'm like, too soon. That's not funny.
No way.
And he says, you know, he goes on to say, it's, how do you respond to people that say that Joe was set up? He says it's complete BS. Mm-hmm. You saw the videos he posted. He was his own worst enemy. I agree that he was his own worst enemy.
For sure.
But I also agree that he was set up.
That he also had some other enemies.
Yeah. Jeff claims that he killed healthy tigers. He'd call them over the fence and then shoot them in the head because he needed the room. He also says that in the documentary, when they say they, quote, found a bug, that it was a lie, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's an antenna for a two-way radio system that a lot of zoos use for their radio systems.
So that's hard to know.
Right.
Like, I mean, it does sound like it wasn't, like, sneaky and hidden. So, like, I feel like a bug would be better hidden. And Josh Dial's the one who says it. So, like, maybe he doesn't know what the radio system looks like. So, I don't know.
And maybe they did find a bug, but... For whatever reason, the documentary just showed the antenna on top of the roof. Because I agree, you know, that's a terrible place for an inconspicuous bug. I mean, it's not like the building's 40 feet high.
Right. So, I don't know. But, I mean, end of the line, like, he was being investigated one way or another.
Right.
Also, like, with this whole killing tigers for space thing, they only found 5 bodies.
Yeah.
So I just feel like, what, 5 times in 20 years, that's when he needed the space?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like unless you have to, like, cut out a bunch of them, like, you're not going to kill them. Like, just build 5 more cages.
Right.
So, like, the fact that he said it was for the space, that seems like a lie.
Right.
I don't know why he did it.
Right.
We obviously hear, like, it seems like it wasn't because they were sick.
Right.
But the space thing seems like BS.
Yeah. Well, everything he says is BS, Lindsay, don't forget.
Right.
So Joel then says to Jeff and Lauren, you know, James claims he has more dirt on you. Are you worried at all about that? And Jeff says, nope, I know why he cooperated with the feds. And let me tell you, it wasn't because of a lemur.
So he apparently has dirt on James as well.
Yeah.
So it seems like a double blackmail sitch.
Yeah.
But... I don't know. James is the one who went to the feds first, so I just feel like they're always the ones that come out on top.
Yeah.
That they'll just be like, I did all this crap, and now you help me, and I'll give you info.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
I don't know.
So Joel asks them, do you think Carol killed her former husband, Don? And Jeff and Lauren, like, almost together say, absolutely. There's no doubt in our minds.
Yeah, they believe it for sure.
Yeah.
And then Joel asks what's more disturbing, that Carol may have killed her ex-husband or her wedding photos with Howard. And Jeff's like, I think maybe the photos with Howard.
Yeah. Yeah. No yeah. doubt. That was not great. So Joel kind of finishes off saying, you know, Joe's now more famous than ever before. How difficult do you think it is for him to be locked away? And Jeff says that, you know, that they're getting reports that he's trying to get to a computer so that he can respond to some of his fans. But I don't know how Jeff would be getting reports. It's not like he and Joe are right. BFFs. Well, so
other prison friends, right. Let's be honest. My best friend, the prison guard that I bribed to give me fake hitmen, told me.
All right, so then we move on to Ranky, John Ranky.
I just wrote, John is so sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so Joel starts off, you know, by kind of saying, did you ever imagine anything like this? And he says, no, man, I don't know how you deal with this. And so Joel then asks, were you committed more to Joe or the animals? And John right off the bat says, the animals. They were my focus. You know, when I had to get my legs amputated, I looked forward to coming back to just them. Mm-hmm. So, and Joel asks, do you think Joe understands how much you actually did at the zoo? And John yeah. says, no, I don't think so. He told me I couldn't run the zoo on numerous occasions, and he tried to keep everyone smaller than him. So,
yeah.
Again, that whole abusive, verbal abusive.
He stayed there for a while despite it all.
Yep.
He talks about, like, a lot of verbal fights, that he threatened to beat him up a couple of times.
Yeah.
And he says that towards the end of it, he just started blowing, like, Joe just started blowing up John's stuff.
Yeah.
That he just blew up, like, his cabin and yeah. his golf cart. Like, he just got angry.
Right.
Just snapped.
Yeah. So Joel asks, you know, you worked there a long time. How did you rectify Joe and his behavior? Mm-hmm. And John's just kind of like, well, you just got to go on with your day, because Joe was always belittling someone. It became all about the cameras, and mm-hmm. he would just fire someone just to fire someone.
Yeah. That's so. We hear that again and again throughout this, just that the cameras got to Joe.
Yep.
Like the fame of it all.
Yeah. So then Joel asks a very interesting question. He says, did you get along with Jeff when he took over the zoo? And so, you know, John tells us he did at first, but he thought that John, I guess, was talking to Joe or passing information Jeff, to Joe. Yeah. Yeah, Jeff thought that John and Joe were kind of in cahoots together, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so he says that he just quit the same day that Joe left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess that same day, he also tells us that same day that Jeff and Dylan got into a fist fight in the parking yeah. lot for like 15 minutes, he says. Like, they were just going at it.
That sounds like the world's worst fist fight.
I can only
15 minutes?
Stupid.
What are you doing? Just wrestling around on the floor?
Well, half of it is probably Jeff trying to hold his hat onto his head. Dusting off his clothes quick.
Yeah. So Joel asks, you know, how has your life changed since the documentary? And John says, it's a lot different. People don't care about the virus. They want to come up to you, shake your hand, and get a picture with you. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Ranky comments about his pants. He says, I still have them because I'm sure I'll end up in court. This is not over. And so Joel says, you think you're going back? And he says, yep. And then Joel asks, you know, is it just because of Joe's appeals? And Ranky says, you know, Joe's appeals, I haven't heard of anything, haven't heard an ending to this case yet. So who knows? You know, Joel goes on to ask, have you had any contact? But John says no. Because he can't shut up, and everything's recorded.
Yeah, he's like, I don't want to talk to him. He talks too much.
Yeah. And so Joel kind of finishes a lot of the interviews with how, because this has been such a phenomenon and it's kind of blown up, who would you want to play you in a movie. So Ranky says, I'm sticking with Matthew McConaughey.
Honestly, good choice.
I think that would be a good choice. I stand by that. I liked pretty much everybody's choice. I think they could.
And he's got that kind of gentle country vibe.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
All right.
All right. Saf is up next.
Ooh.
Yeah. So Joel asks, has your life changed since it was Relief? And he tells us it is because he doesn't have any anonymity and people recognize him pretty much everywhere he goes.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. Joel says, you clearly love the animals and were very committed to your job. Were you more loyal to the animals or to the
To Joe.
And Saf agrees again, definitely the animals. It may have seemed that I was more loyal to him, to Joe, but everything I sacrificed was for the animals. Joel asks, Joe admitted to shooting some of tigers outright. Were you outraged by that? And Saf says, obviously I was. At that point, it was out of my control. Joe would explain that they were old or they were injured. That's what we were told. So it sounds like... you know, which we can glean from the documentary, that a lot of people didn't really know the whole story or maybe, you know, exactly what was going on. Well, we're not holding anyone else accountable.
That no one in this knows the whole story.
Right.
So everyone's just piecing together their half-truths with the lies,
the
with the actual truth, and trying to see where the straight line is.
Yeah. So Joel asks, after seeing all the episodes, has it changed your views on whether animals, these animals, should be kept in captivity? And Saf says, I never thought that they should be kept in captivity. The reality is they cannot be returned to the wild, and there's not much of a wild to be returned to.
Yeah, which is a sad truth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So Joel says, you identify as a man. Were you upset that the documentary kept referring to you as a she? And he admits, I don't think it bothered me as much as it bothered everyone else because he didn't really pay it any mind. I'm sure he was watching it. He was just watching to watch.
Yeah.
And it probably didn't even faze him at all, you know?
I read an article where he talked about, he said that he just gets called like 12 different things a day.
Right.
That he's just so used
to
everyone mixing it up that it's just like, whatever.
Yeah.
So.
Joel goes into next, you know, having his arm, you know, get ripped off and says, one of the biggest moments in the show is when your arm is horribly injured. You don't seem to have any regrets about it being taken off.
Yeah.
And he says, no, I don't have any regrets. I know I made the right decision when I made it and I would make that decision again. So, you know, back in episode two, when we were kind of discussing, it sounds like
he's not bitter.
Right.
Yeah.
At all.
And he says it took all of like 15 seconds for the attack to happen.
Right.
That it was just too quick.
Yep.
And they still don't really explain why or how.
Right.
Which I was like, come on, Joel.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He said there was no weirdness with the tiger, though.
Yeah.
But that they did have to move the tiger to a different location. So they said that the tiger's life changed a ton.
Right.
And I was like, so did yours. You lost an arm.
Right.
Like he says, like, his life changed dramatically, as if, like, his didn't, you know? And I was like, yours did too, dude. Like, you don't have a hand.
Right. You know, okay, so Joel asks, when you were injured, did you think, oh no, a man with a bleached mullet who's not an EMT but is dressed like one is going to try to save my life?
I thought that was so funny.
And Sass says, yeah, no, I don't even remember what he was wearing on that day. I had more pressing priorities to worry about. And I was like, fair.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm sure he had no idea and was just like, oh my goodness, I just got attacked by a tiger. Please help.
At that point, though, also, like, it just doesn't even faze you.
Right.
It's just like, yeah, he's got his EMT jacket on. Okay.
So Joel, I think this is interesting. Joel then asks, did you ever watch footage of the attack?
Yeah.
And Saf tells us that he's seen it over and over again, and they actually use it as a training video, and they decided that this is something that people should watch before they decide if this is a career move that they want to make. I thought that was interesting. I thought that was kind of cool.
Well, I guess they can't really show a bunch of craziness in the documentary, but I was like, why didn't you show me? Like,
right.
I don't know.
Right.
I guess they don't want people, like, barfing. Like, but also, I was like, well, I want to know what happened.
And then Joel, right. So then Joel asks, can you tell us the story of the Thanksgiving dinner? Was there more to it than we saw? And Saf says, yes, there definitely was. They showed him serving it, but they never explained what he was doing, that he fed people for free a full Thanksgiving dinner. They stayed up all night, you know, the night before, and that they did this every year for as long as he was there, which was for over 10 years.
Yeah.
Which is true. They kind of skate by this. You don't really understand what's going on.
Right. It's just like, okay, Thanksgiving. Like,
right.
And he says, like, that's something that wasn't highlighted enough. He says that Joe did a lot of messed up stuff, but I've seen him give the jacket off of his back to people. And he's like, and now that's shown, the whole world knows it, that he did a lot of messed up stuff.
Right.
But he did a lot of good stuff, too.
Right.
So, you know, you hear this. I mean, and I'm sure no one's, like, just terrible.
Right.
But Saf does have a level of respect for Joe.
Yeah.
And for his kindness, too.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and Joel asks, do you think he deserves to be in prison? And his answer is, I think justice was served, but I don't want to see him die in prison.
Yeah.
So, definitely a different take than Eric.
Yeah.
You know, Eric's very bitter and angry towards Joe, it seems. And Saf seems to not have as much resentment towards him.
Yeah, it also seems like Saf was a little lower in the totem pole. Like, he didn't know why the Tigers died. You know, like, Eric was right there in all
of it. Yeah, and I'm not blaming Eric at all for his feelings, but
Saf just might not know as much either. It's hard, that's hard to say with this, you know, so.
It just seems,
there's two sides.
Yeah, there's two sides. It seems like his take is maybe a little bit more balanced because he's more willing to point out even one good thing about Joe, whereas Eric, it doesn't seem like he's there yet.
Yeah. He definitely does seem a little more neutral.
Right. Okay, so now we interview Josh. And so Joel asks, you know, how long were you?
This guy just irks me.
You don't like Josh Dial? Was it because
pisses me off?
Is it because he doesn't know how to vape?
Ugh, that was stupid. I was like, first of all, why are you vaping in a documentary? Second of all, don't do it if you're gonna cough like an idiot afterwards. I mean, like, I probably would too, but that would be why I wasn't vaping in a documentary. I just, his whole personality irks me. And when he keeps saying F the feds, he's so proud of me. He's like, I'm a libertarian, F the feds. I'll say it again right now. And I'm like, this is not a good look on you. Oh, it just bothers me. Anyway, I'm done.
Are you sure? I mean, we can record for hours. You can just keep going. Okay, so Joel says, how long were you with Joe while the cameras were following you? And, you know, he says, I've known him and the producers since day one of filming. I think they did a wonderful job putting this together. That was news to me. I didn't realize because he's brought in so late in the documentary.
Yeah. It seems like he's not around that much.
Yeah.
So he had a bigger presence than it seems.
And so Joel says, well, that's funny because Jeff Lowe has a lot of issues with how it was put together. And Josh's answer is, well, the truth hurts.
Only thing I liked about him was that answer.
So Joel then says, so you knew who Joe was before you started working for him. What was your impression? And Josh says, well, I knew he was absolutely crazy, but how often do you get to say I'm running a whole campaign for a governor candidate? Which, that's valid. Joel then asks, you lived at the zoo. What was it like? And Josh tells us that the best part was the lions every morning would do their roars. All of the windows would reverberate from like 30 to 40 lions roaring at the same time.
That's cool. That's so cool. Yeah.
Okay. So trigger warning. We're going to talk about Travis a little bit.
Yeah.
So Joel asks, you were in the room when Travis shot himself. Tell us about that. And Josh says, I had to go into that office every day and sit in the same chair and look at the same bullet hole in the same wall for over a year and a half.
Oh.
And I was never able to get counseling because Joe didn't help me and neither did Jeff Lowe. That
is terrible. I could see Joe, like, he's dealing with his own grief, not thinking to help him, but that no one, Jeff didn't, like, that no one reached out, suggested counseling, suggested help. It's just awful.
Yeah. I can't even imagine, like, the post-traumatic stress that would
inflict on him. Oh, and when you said the bullet hole in the wall, like, I hadn't even thought of
that. Yeah. Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. And then he says that he's trying to get some counseling, and that he then wants to jump back into campaigning.
Yeah.
Which I couldn't tell if it was a good idea or a bad one.
Right.
So it's like, given the crap shoot of, like, a candidate that you got, you did a fair job with
this
campaign.
Right.
But also, like,
it did 19% of the vote, Lindsay.
Right. He did okay. So I'm like, I don't know if that was just Joe, like, craziness, though.
Right.
How much that was you. Like,
I don't
know. And who are you going to get to, like, represent next? To be like, well, I helped Joe Exotic. What's your resume? Like,
you know what? But this show is such a phenomenon that I bet crazy people will hire him. Like, I bet this is going to...
craziness.
Yeah, I bet that'll be an appeal. I don't think that that's a strike in his...
You do you, Josh.
Okay, so Joel goes on to say, obviously that moment was one of the most tragic on the show. When he walked in, was he talking to you? And so we kind of get more of a picture of what was going on. And so Josh tells us, you know, we were talking. He was telling me about this gun that he just bought. He said, you know, a Ruger won't fire with a clip in it. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. And then he puts the gun to his head and pulled the trigger. So Joel asks, do you think he did it deliberately? And Josh says, he honestly says, no, I was right there. I could see it in his eyes right before he died. And so he basically tells us that there was this, like, five-second moment of this realization in Travis's eyes that he did not think that that was going to happen. So.
That's, oh, yeah. It's terrible. This is gun safety, guys.
Yeah.
Just.
Don't put guns to your head.
Yeah,
whether you think they're loaded or not, do not put guns to your head.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Ugh. It's not funny.
So Joel asks, did anyone think to get Joe counseling after Travis's death? And Josh said that he spoke to a shaman, but it seemed to only make things worse.
Well, you know.
And so then Joel goes on to ask, were you surprised when you found he was guilty for all 19 counts? And Josh says, no. Joel then asks, do you think Carol Sanctuary is a better setup than Joe's Zoo, or do you see them as the same? And Josh straight up says, they're the same. They're all the same. All of these animal places and people are the same. It's all about the money. I don't disagree.
I agree 100%.
Joel asks, is there anything that was talked about on the internet that you disagree with strongly? And Josh says, I don't do drugs. I just want to clear that up.
What? Who thought he did?
I don't know.
I want to know. He seems like a straight-laced little, like, just, like, boring, if anything.
Right.
You know, like.
I wonder, I'm sure there's some Reddit string of, you know, everybody's on drugs. And so Joel finishes up and says, Joe wanted to be famous. Do you think he knows the scope of his fame now? And Josh says, oh, yeah, he's getting all of the messages people are sending, and he's loving every minute of it. All right, so the next, I have like three lines from his interview with John Finley.
It was short.
It was a little bizarre. It was a little awkward.
It was very awkward.
I think Joel was trying to do the best he can. And it's, you know, I'm nothing against John. You know, he's not a reporter. He's, you know, he's not in this business, you know, so he doesn't necessarily know how to act probably when he's being asked questions. But
it was unhealthy.
Okay, so Joel says, so you were in a relationship with Joe, but also involved with a woman who worked at the zoo. Were there a lot of people hooking up at the zoo? And he just says, yep, from what I understand, yeah, a lot of people were hooking up.
He said he saw a lot of relationships start and end because of the zoo.
Right. Joel asks, well, were you happy with how you were portrayed? And John says, no, I was portrayed as a drugged out hillbilly. I was 4 or 5 years clean at the time that they filmed it.
I thought that was fascinating.
Yes.
Because I definitely was like, yep, he's just a high crazy person.
Yeah.
Like, that was 100% how that came across.
Right.
So, and he says, like, he's got teeth as they're interviewing him.
Yep.
And he's like, you know, it took him a time to get it, but now to get his teeth, like, to afford them, and now he has them all the time.
Yeah.
Getting
used to them.
Yeah, and he says, like, even with his tattoo, like, they showed it before it was finished.
Sure.
And he said it looked bad. And he's like, it looks way better now. So, like, he feels like they just kind of wanted him to seem a little skankier than he was.
Well, which is so silly, because, of course, the tattoo wasn't finished. Like, I don't know that much about tattoos, but I could tell that this was just... like the first round. Like when you're getting a huge tattoo, especially even one covered up,
right?
Like you don't just go and sit for 12 hours of someone tattooing you. Like that sounds horrible. Of course you would do it in stages and phases.
Well, and it was a cover up and you could still see the words. So yeah. I think I earlier in our episodes did make fun of it for looking bad because it did look terrible. And I just think having a bowl down there is a stupid idea. Either way, he says that he feels like they kind of went out of their way to portray him negatively,
yeah.
Which is sad.
Yeah.
And I 100% believed it. So.
Yeah, I believe that too.
We're part of the problem.
So Joel asks, well, why were you always shirtless? And he's like, my tattoos. I was just showing them off. It was a little cold, but it was fun.
Okay.
Lindsay, if you could get a tattoo, what would you get?
Oh, there's an artist I follow in New Zealand that does these crazy floral pieces.
Ooh.
They're like super fine lined and detailed. They're gorgeous. It's actually a plan to get one sometime. It's a long life goal. So like kind of like a little hip side area.
Nice.
I'll show you. They're beautiful.
Ooh, can't wait.
Yeah.
All right. So last but not least, our favorite.
Rick Kirkham is back. We missed Rick at the end.
So he's living in Norway.
I'm
and
so
I was like, that's so
him.
Cool.
He's so cute. Fell in love with a Norwegian girl.
Yep.
And just took advantage of leaving all the craziness.
Yeah.
He left the mess behind and up and moved to Norway.
That's super cool.
It's like, good for you, Rick.
Yeah, that's super cool.
I love that.
Do you think they met online?
Probably.
Do you think they were playing a game? Like, what game would Rick Kirkham play online?
Maybe he's on a dating site.
Maybe Texas Hold'em?
Ooh.
I feel like Rick Kirkham would play Texas Hold'em.
And then find, like, a sexy card playing woman. Either that or she happened to be visiting.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Or it was like a dating site.
Sure.
But I love that for him.
Yeah, that was really cool. Okay, so Joel asks, has Tiger King mania reached Norway? And this is so funny. He basically shows us a newspaper. It's a full spread in the paper that came out 2 days ago of just his face.
It's wild. Guys, it's both sides of the paper. It's huge.
That is crazy. And so Joel says, well, we know you've been producing for years. Have you done anything close to something like this? And so Ranky tells us, Kirkham. I have R listed, and then in my mind, I always think of Ranky. It's Kirkham. So Rick says, I started Inside Edition in 1989. I got used to having a bit of fame, but it's nothing compared to this documentary series.
That's crazy.
Which is so crazy.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I guess it makes sense because 1989, like, they didn't have the internet or social media, so everything kind of blows up with that now. But so he asks, Joel asks, who's the more disturbed individual, Joe Exotic or Bill O'Reilly?
What a comparison. I was just like, excuse me, what?
I think it was just because Bill O'Reilly used to be on Inside Edition, so he's worked with both people.
Yes.
But I thought it was hilarious.
It was so weird.
And so Kirkham says, that's a great question. I would say Joe Exotic is more evil and Bill is more of a butthead. I just wrote butthead. I don't think he said that, but I wrote butthead. Joel asks, how many years ago did you meet Joe? And so Kirkham tells us that Joe had put an ad on Craigslist and that it was such an outrageous ad that he's a gay man that owns tigers and shoots guns. So he called him up and he asked, you know, what did I want, basically? And I said, I want to come talk to you about your show. So Kirkham goes up that night. He hadn't brought anything with him. And then all of a sudden, boom, he's living inside a crazy zoo.
Wild.
That's a crazy story.
Of course Joe is advertising on Craigslist.
That
part cracked me up. But I did want to know why Rick was like perusing Craigslist.
Yeah.
That was another
question. That's a good question. That should have been a follow-up question.
What was he doing there in the first place? Missed connections with Miss Norway.
So Joel says, when did you realize the real danger of his flamboyant behavior and think, oh, wait, this might all go away? And Kirkham says, it was about 3 months in. I saw him doing some things to animals that I knew was wrong, as I have admitted. I sold out my journalistic integrity by not going to the authorities with what I had seen. And, you know, saying, you need to come in and stop this guy because the things that I saw were wrong. So, you know, he tells a story about a woman.
Trigger warning.
Yeah.
For animal abuse.
Yes. Trigger warning. Because he tells us a story about a woman who had a horse. Yeah. An old woman who had a horse she needed to drop off. And she basically had said, you know, she can't take care of it. She's hoping that Joe will give him a place to stay to have a better life.
And she's, like, crying and upset. So she obviously loved the horse and just, like, wanted him to have a good home.
And he tells her, don't worry about it. You know, we'll take good care of him. He'll have a great life here. And basically, as soon as she leaves, he shoots the horse, cuts it up, and feeds it to the tigers.
It's awful.
Which, I mean, I don't have, you know, when they show the footage of him using the cows that have passed away, like, I don't have a problem with that because, you know, the tigers need to eat, and as opposed to just everything going to waste. But to shoot someone's horse that you literally have just said you're going to take care of?
Yeah. And it doesn't sound like the horse was, like, in bad shape.
Right. It was just older.
Like, yeah. It's just cruel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then Joel asks, did you ever see him kill a lion or a tiger? Mm. And Kirkham tells us, I did. I saw him shoot two tigers, actually. One because he was pissed off at the tiger, and because the tiger nearly bit him one day.
That's it. Just nearly bit him, and it's gone. So.
Joel asks, do you think he's skipping around his cell or do you think he's punching a wall? And Kirkham says, I don't think he will leave prison alive. Excuse me. I don't think that he'll be able to stand it.
Which seems true from the phone calls we hear of him, like, just belaboring his situation. He's not seeming like he's okay.
Yeah. Kirkham then goes on to tell us something that was interesting. He says, one thing to point out that the documentary does not show is that Joe was actually terrified of big cats. He was terrified of the lions and tigers. And in the shots, you see him with the white tiger, and I guess there's another one. He just says the other one. The white one is blind, and the other one is basically high on tranquilizers.
Which I didn't, like, I didn't want to say that he's lying, but I feel like there's more shots of him in cages than just that one.
That's what I felt. I didn't know how to take him
bit
saying
that.
Foot. Yeah.
You see him driving in his car.
With a baby tiger. And maybe
a big tiger in his passenger seat.
Right.
Like, so I just, that was questionable.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe in that one moment he was doing that for his, just so his video went well.
Right.
I felt like there was enough footage of him in cages.
These tiger cages.
That seemed questionable that every single time they were on tranquilizers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. I just wanted more info. I don't want to say that my favorite guy is lying. But it was curious.
It was, it was definitely a, like, is this true? It doesn't seem like it, but So Joel says, what did you think of Joe's supposed plot to kill Carol? And Kirkham says, I mean, he asked me to kill Carol one time. It was a joke at first, but when I left the part and this, you know, when the studio burned down, it seemed to all get super serious.
Yeah.
So Joel says, as it winds down, do you regret feeding into it at all?
Oh, and this is so sad.
Yeah. Kirkham says, I regret ever meeting Joe Exotic. It started out as an amazing show about these big cats, but I was sucked into the surreal world of Joe Exotic.
Yeah.
And he tells us that he has nightmares on a pretty much nightly basis.
He says he's like, I had one last night.
Yep.
So he's still having nightmares just about Joe, about being there.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
He does say that the one good thing that could come out of all of this is that people saying, let's free these animals. Let's not have them locked up in these cages.
Yeah.
Joel says, who would you have cast in the movie, you know, the Joel Exotic movie?
Yeah.
And so Kirkham says that he thinks that Billy Bob Thornton has been suggested and that he would make a good Rick Kirkham.
That's cute.
Yeah. So that's it.
Rick seems to be doing well.
Yeah.
All seem to be doing pretty okay afterwards.
Yeah. I'm happy about him because, you know, in the last we see of Kirkham in the documentary, he's just so depressed.
Yeah.
You know, his studio, all that footage is burnt down and it's just a heartbreaking shot. And then you don't see him again, really.
Yeah.
So I'm glad he's doing well and that he's very happy.
The follow-up, even if it didn't give, like, a ton of great new info, like, right. It was still nice just to see where people are at, like, current life.
Yeah.
You know, John's got his teeth.
Yep.
Like, Reinke's girlfriend.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
Kirkham's in Norway. Just still a butthead. So,
yeah.
It was just, that was nice.
Yeah.
And it felt a little more natural, you know, less like, what are they cutting the scenes this way?
Sure.
Like, it was just more, here's some info. So.
Yeah.
It was a nice addition.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good. It's a little boring, but it was good.
Tiger King, guys.
That's it, man.
Wow.
What a wild ride, eh?
It was bizarre. If you are only listening to this and haven't seen it, you should still go watch it yourself.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot we didn't talk about, and it's still ridiculous.
Yeah. It's crazy. But I feel very strongly that it should have been 4, maybe 5 episodes still. So it does get a little long.
Yeah.
So fair warning that it gets a little long.
Yeah.
Like these episodes of the podcast.
We'll work on it. We'll work on it.
So yeah, thanks for listening. This was awesome. Lindsay, do you have anything that you are wanting to promote this week that you love?
Oh,
tell our listeners about.
I thought of something the other day and I have since forgotten. Hold on. I'm thinking, I did a fun little activity with my jeans last night.
Ooh.
I just took some like fluffs and embroidered like a little thing onto the pockets.
I saw it.
Thank you.
It's so cute. I love it.
I said thank you before you complimented me. And now
I saw it. It looked terrible,
like a jerk.
Lindsay. You are not welcome. Yeah, what if I just dissed you and
right.
I was like, it looked terrible.
Thank you for seeing it. Amazing. No. But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So I've been doing more like crafty projects like that, and it's been a nice time. So
yeah,
I'm gonna try and do some more stitching on them in other places.
Very cool.
My free jeans are my fun ones.
Yeah.
I get a few pairs from my younger sister.
Yeah, yeah.
So I like ripped one up myself once, and now I'm doing embroidery things.
Fun embroidery.
If I make them look terrible, they were free.
That's cool.
How about you, Sarah?
You know, I'm going to go back to something I've already said just because I feel very strongly about it. And I'm going to promote the Let's Go to Court podcast because it's just really, really funny, you guys. They're just the two hosts, Kristen and, oh no, I lost it. Kristen, Brandy. Sorry, I'm so sorry. Kristen and Brandy are so funny. They have such great chemistry and I literally laugh all the time. My husband walks in on me and I'm just busting a gut laughing because it's so funny. So if you're looking for a really funny podcast, definitely check out Let's Go to Court.
Awesome.
It's really good. So.
Yay. Wow. It's done, guys.
All right, so Tiger King's done. I probably will have a few episodes here and there just as kind of like a palate cleanser.
Yes.
And then I just discussed with Lindsay,
ooh,
and she agreed that the next thing that we will cover is...
Abducted in Plain Sight.
Yes, that's a crazy one.
You guys, I will let you know right now, I'm already nervous and I haven't even watched it. I just heard Sarah tell me about it once over coffee and I'm already like dreading watching.
Which is hilarious because it's so hard. If you've seen it, you know. And right now you're like nodding your head and like smiling because you know how hard it is to try and explain to someone who hasn't seen the documentary what it's about. It's just the craziest story, and I'm excited to do it.
All right. It'll be good. Well, the story will be terrible. Yeah. Our podcast will be good.
Thanks for listening, guys. If you want more, you can check us out on Instagram. It's at Constant Rambling Pod, and then the email is constantramblingpod@gmail.com. Yes, I said the email wrong the last like 5 episodes, and I'm very sorry.
I was just about to correct you.
I know. It's because I set it up, and then I, you know, I was like, oh, I'm pretty sure when I set it up 4 weeks ago, it was just constantrambling@gmail. And then I actually went and looked at it, and I was like, it sure wasn't.
Oh, no.
constantramblingpod@gmail.com.
See if you can set up constant rambling and just have them forward.
Right? So, well, thanks for listening, and yeah, we'll see you soon.
Bye, guys.
Bye.